This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a stage drama honoring a legendary singer, a birthday bash where art plays a major role in the party, or a garden adventure with a Shakespearean twist, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. New Orleans veteran actress Troy Bechet is Mahalia Jackson as Southern Rep Theater presents the world premiere of Flowers for Haley. The journey of the legendary Queen of Gospel comes alive in this work written by and starring Bechet. Troy Bechet is here. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Yes, I'm excited.
Is this your first play?
It is the first play I have written all by myself. I've been a co-writer on a few plays, but yes, so this is all me.
You've got some big shoes to fill. How long has this work been in the making?
Oh, too long. Too long. Amy Hayes actually asked me to play Mahalia Jackson in a fundraiser that they were doing called Louisiana Lady some several years ago. And long story short, I ended up writing the piece that I performed. So talked a little bit as Mahalia, and then I sang Precious Lord. And there was such a wonderful response to it. That night she said, Troy, you really should write a play. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. What? Yeah. And then a few months later, she says, well, how's that play going? I said, you were serious? I started writing, but I really put it on the side. I didn't think that it was going to happen. And she has consistently and patiently and generously reached out to ask about it. And she did again last year. And I said, I'm going to finish this play. And I sent it to her. And she said, Troy, we want to help you to develop it and to produce it in our season next year.
Wow. It's quite impressive. When did you first become aware of the Queen of Gospel? And did she influence your life growing up?
Not as much as she should have. You know, I was talking with Kevin Belton this morning, and he said, you know, a lot of people don't even know that Mahalia is from New Orleans, which is a sad statement to me, since she, to me, is so emblematic of this city. And in doing the research about her, she so loved New Orleans. I mean, she lived in Chicago, but New Orleans was her soul. And she said that it influenced the way that she sang, that she sang the way that she did because she grew up around brass bands and jazz and the sanctified church next to her house. And all of those rhythmic, soulful ways of singing became a part of her.
Now, how does this journey begin?
Well, it begins in her kitchen. Mahalia was a wonderful cook. She loved to cook. She loved to eat her own cooking. She said that all the time. She had people at her house all the time, of course, including Martin Luther King, eating fried chicken in her kitchen at her kitchen table. So for me, those were the two worlds that she felt most comfortable in, the stage and her kitchen. So the play shifts back and forth between those two places.
Now, Mahalia is celebrated in story and song in your work. Can you tell us a story that will give us a little insight into her character?
Mahalia was incredibly funny. People said that she would just lighten up the room. It's not included in the play, but there's a story about her at one of the first jazz fests, and they were trying to take a picture. Everybody was tense, and she just blurted out, Mother Ward, don't you owe me some money? Because she was very concerned about money, too. And then everybody rolled. You know, they all fell out laughing, and then they were able to take this really joyful picture. So despite the fact that there was a lot of sadness in her life, she found joy. I believe that she thought that was a part of her mission, really, to bring joy to people's lives.
Are you singing in the production?
I am. I am playing Mahalia and singing 14 songs.
What is one of your favorite gospel songs?
I've never sung this song before this show, but How Great Thou Art is such a beautiful song. Elijah Rock, she has such energy in her singing. You're just going on this journey of joy and spirituality with her, and that's our hope, that people doing those songs will take that journey with us too.
Challenging was it for you to fill those shoes?
It's petrifying, actually. It is quite scary, but I took a lot of time really making sure that this was very respectful of her, that really honored her, not only as a singer, but as a human being, that she's a person that overcame lots of trials and tribulations and was able to give this gift that she was given to the world. I think that the show does that.
Mahalia Jackson also played an important role in the civil rights movement. Is that part of the journey, a focus of Flowers for Haley?
So the premise is that a college student by the name of Thea, she's a music student, and she comes to interview Mahalia. And without giving away anything in the play, her father was involved in the civil rights movement. And she's struggling with some issues because of that. And so this journey that Mahalia and Thea take together is one of sisterhood, a little bit of motherhood, because Mahalia never had any children. She was unable to have children. She was divorced twice. She really struggled with that as a woman growing up in the 40s and 50s and 60s, where that was so important to your being a mom, being a wife. And so both Thea and Mahalia get some hope and energy from each other. So Thea's just asking her questions about her life, and then she answers them, and then we see little snippets of that. There is actually a scene from the March on Washington, her singing the two songs that she sang then, I've Been Buked and I've Been Scorned, and How I Got Over. And the lead-in to that, she talks really about the impact of Martin Luther King on her life and the struggle for equality and really the joy that she found and the hope that she found when people, white people and black people, came together during the civil rights movement and struggled together for equality.
And who else is in the cast?
A wonderful woman by the name of Kathleen Moore, who happens to be Deacon John's niece. It's really primarily just the two of us as characters in the play.
Mahalia sang a song, If I Can Help Somebody.
Yeah.
As I travel along with a word of song, from doing wrong, my life will not be in vain. How do you think bringing her life story to the stage will help others on their spiritual journey?
Yeah, that is a great question. And it is the last song in the show. That was her message, that we have a responsibility to each other. This show helps to bring that message about, that commitment that she felt that her music brought people together. I do think that music does heal. It offers hope. It connects people in ways that words alone don't do. You just feel it. And it helps you to find empathy, which I think is something that we're lacking a lot in the world today, that people don't put themselves in other people's shoes so that they can have just a little taste of what it's like from their own experience, because that changes the way that you interact with someone.
Actress and playwright Troy Bichette, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, Diane. In a word.
Southern Rep Theater presents Flowers for Haley, written by and starring New Orleans veteran actress Troy Bichette. Performances run May 8th through 26th at Southern Rep Theater, 2541 Bayou Road. A party celebrating two decades of artful learning in New Orleans public schools gets underway this Mother's Day weekend. KidSmart, an arts education nonprofit, is celebrating its 20th anniversary with Art Jam, a family-friendly birthday extravaganza featuring art, storytelling, live music, and performances. KidSmart Executive Director Elise Galeno-Goldman is here with details. Elise, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Diane.
20 years, wow. Tell us about this artful journey between KidSmart and New Orleans Public Schools. How did the partnership come about?
Well, when we first started, we were an out-of-school time program. And over time, the schools that we worked with asked us to come into the school day more and more and more. I think that what really changed things for us was Hurricane Katrina. And when we came back after the storm, we realized that as the schools were reopening, they needed a little bit more support, and we were able to spend more time during the school day embedding artists into the classrooms, co-teaching with classroom teachers. If you can imagine, it's like Hamilton every day in your classroom, and working a lot more with classroom teachers to help them find different ways to bring the arts and experiential, joyful learning into their classrooms. So since 2007, we've been building this program as it lives now, but we've been working with public schools in New Orleans since 1999.
What is the program based on?
We're an arts integration organization, which means that we really believe in students learning with, through, and in the arts. So when they're in a science classroom, we have perhaps a dancer that is co-teaching that lesson with their classroom teacher. So in addition to understanding the facts about science, they're also finding ways of using dance and learning about dance to understand how maybe the solar system works or how plants grow. We've got a poet embedded in a school who is working a lot with social studies, so students can really think about and understand how current political events impact their lives and really express their feelings and their ideas about them. So when we're integrating the arts, what we find is that they comprehend material better, they retain it longer, they have more interest in it, and they're really understanding it at a much deeper level.
And how are the teachers affected by the program?
Well, every teacher that we work with, you know, now has a partner in their classroom journey, which is just such a fantastic support. You know, I think that a lot of times classroom teachers can feel very isolated. You know, you spend a lot of time alone figuring out what to do with your students every day. So it's nice to have that artist in their classroom. They really become partners in the learning. And in addition to that, we have a team of teachers that come to us once a month for classroom professional development. So outside of school time, teachers from all of the schools we work with come together and learn new strategies to bring back into their classroom. So they are able to turn to one another and say, oh, I tried this. Have you tried this? You know, this is what really worked for me. And create really their own professional learning community together.
2 decades later now, what are your thoughts on the success of the program?
We have now worked with over 30,000 kids in New Orleans. We've got hundreds and hundreds of teachers that we've worked with. And what we're finding from the data that we collect is that our students are academically succeeding at higher rates, which is very important. And also, we find that there are all of these other things that are so important to students that kind of go beyond what we really can measure with test scores. Where we see a lot of gains is creative thinking, problem solving, how they are interacting and collaborating with one another, you know, things that we all want to be able to have as citizens of our city and our world. So when we look at the data that's coming back, it's kind of a more holistic view than just maybe looking at a test score. And what we're finding is that kids really want to come to school. They're really enjoying learning. And that's really what we want to see.
Can you recount a favorite story where art made a difference for a student?
We actually very recently were able to reconnect with one of our very first KidSmart students. And he reached out to us via social media. He was with us in 1999 or 2000 and said, you know, I think about this program all the time. It changed my life because it made me understand that I had other options, other ways of being, and started thinking more creatively about like what I wanted my future to look like. So he went from working with us in our program, which at that point he was a third or fourth grade student. Now he's an adult and he's taken some of these different creative thinking ideas to turn them into like creating his own business and finding different ways to pursue his passion as an adult.
What grade levels are included in the program?
Right now we're working primarily with K through 8 students in 9 public schools. So we're expanding as we move forward. Next year we'll be in 11 public schools. And in addition to that, we do some enrichment classes, after school classes. So we actually work with some high school students through those programs as well. So we're trying to hit kind of a full range. Then we work with teachers, so we've got adults. So we really at this point are working with, you know, 4-year-olds through probably 75-year-olds.
So how will you celebrate this milestone anniversary?
Well, we just moved into the campus, the Rose Collaborative, right off of Bayou Road. So we're celebrating with our neighbors there. We've got Southern Rep Theater, Community Book Center, and our all-day block party is taking place all in that parking lot and along Bayou Road. We've got performances scheduled all day, including the Trombone Shorty Foundation students, Rich Collins of the Imagination Movers. The Community Book Center is hosting Gina Allen doing a story time activity and Icon doing a poetry reading. And then we have a lot of our cultural organizations in town, people who are doing just amazing work in the arts with kids every day. We're going to come out and lead activities such as NOMA's Mobile Museum, 826 New Orleans, Make Music NOLA, the Children's Museum, celebrating their new location, the Waldorf School, which is also going to be moving into that same space, and the Ogden Museum.
Wow, that's going to be a big bash.
Yeah. Hopefully parents and families are going to come out and see all of these other great offerings that they can take advantage of in our city. Lynx Rajewski Foundation and Koshan Butcher are going to be out there giving away some delicious barbecue, mac and cheese, etc. And the Cupcake Fairies down the street on Bayou Road will have cupcake decorating for kids. So come to the info booth, get your coupon so you can get your free lunch and free cupcake and help us celebrate.
KidSmart Executive Director Elise Gallinel-Goldman, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
1, 2, 3, 4.
If you're 3 years old, count three.
1, 2, 3.
Now, if you're 2 years old, just scream.
Art Jam, KidSmart's family-friendly anniversary block party takes place Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 2541 Bayou Road. It is free and open to the public. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The NOLA Project closes its season with a nod to the Bard in the outdoor world premiere of The Henchman, a Shakespeare Story, the comedic work written by ensemble member and Big Easy Entertainment Awards Theater Person of the Year, Michael Aaron Santos, is a new sequel to A Midsummer Night's Dream and is set in Noma's Bestoff Sculpture Garden. We have a full house, artistic director A.J. Allegra, guest director Kristen Schaffner, and actor Kyrie Armstead are here. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Happy to be here.
AJ, let's begin with you. Has the NOLA project come full circle with this production?
Yes, I think so. We started performing in the Sculpture Garden in 2011 with A Midsummer Night's Dream. There was only a performance that was performed four times on Fridays, and it was massively attended. I mean, we had over 500 people on average each night. Now, these many years later, we have a more traditional run that lasts us 3 weeks and it goes over 12 performances. But it felt like a great thing to be able to kind of nod back to that original success. So when Michael told me that he was interested in writing something Shakespeare-inspired, I said, what? And he said, well, I'd like to write, you know, kind of a spinoff of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I said, that's a great idea. So many people have great memories of that original production, from moving around the garden to seeing the characters come out on a gondola at the end. And in this production, I think that we're trying to kind of recapture a lot of that magic, but with an all-new script.
So let's get into the story.
In A Midsummer Night's Dream, people might remember that Titania and Oberon, the fairy king and queen, are having this argument over a changeling child. The very first time we see them, they say, well met by moonlight, fair Titania. And Oberon says, I do but beg a little changeling child to be my henchman. And that is the jumping off point for this play. Michael imagines what that child might be and who he might grow up to be. And so we meet the changeling child, Jacob, who Michael has named, 15 years later, while Oberon is still his overlord and attempting to make him into the fighter, this henchman that he desires.
Kristen, what will we experience?
We'll begin the play set in India and learn a little bit about characters there. Most of those characters are created by Michael for the purposes of the storytelling. And then you'll be transported to Ireland, the land of the fairies. There's some fun magic and tricks up our sleeves there. And then we will journey to Greece for Act Two, where we will transition to the front of the sculpture garden. You can expect boats and Amazons and some battle sequences as well for a big epic finale on the front steps of the sculpture garden.
So what Michael's done is he's brought back characters from the original Midsummer. He was mostly focusing on the non-human characters, the characters of Puck and Oberon and Titania and all of the fairies, which are Peas Blossom, Moth, Mustard Seed, Cobweb. Those characters all make return appearances in this production, and it's filled with a lot of the fun and the humor and the playfulness that I think is found in Midsummer.
Kyrie, what character do you play?
I play a character by the name of Sterngildon. He is a deputy that works for the throne of India and is on this journey with the king, Esau, in order to help capture his brother, the henchman.
Tell us about your role and how you get into character.
My character, he's a little goofy, maybe not the sharpest crayon in the pack, but he is guided by his sister, the constable, Krance Rosen. And so we're kind of always together. So that's where the majority, I think, of the fun and the comedy comes in for our characters, is interacting together and kind of getting beat up on a little bit.
And you'll notice that the characters' names of Krance Rosen and Sterngildon are kind of fun Shakespearean allusions to Hamlet's two best friends, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
This scene is from the very top of the play, and it is my character Sterngildon and my character's sister, Krance Rosen, looking for the individuals who are starting this coup against the throne of India.
Usurpers! Vile usurpers, a coup plot! Treasonous villains that would the throne do!
Quick! Find them out! Their location expose! Citizens, hear me! Leave no stone or turn, nor no door unlocked!
Hold there, deputy and dear brother. Our song be, leave no stone unturned, nor no door locked.
Is it then? Yea, methinks a more proper cry that doth make amend. Leave no stone unturned, nor door locked. Usurpers!
Usurpers!
Usurpers be underfoot!
Too fit to fiction falsely, our prince, Esau the Great, hunter of men.
Sound alarm! Stand as sentry, must we all!
So one of the biggest moments, I think, of comedy that comes between our characters is the fact that we have communication issues. We're bumbling around, I think, as you heard. We don't quite always understand each other.
And it has the quality that a lot of Shakespeare comedy has, which is malapropism. People constantly misusing phrases and misusing words in funny ways, in which they do so in utter confidence, but delights the audience to see how utterly wrong they are.
So tell us, what themes are being explored in this work?
There's a lot of really great, deep meaning underlying some of Michael's fun and playful text. And I think there's a lot about nonviolence and how we approach violence in society, especially as kingdoms are battling over things. There's a lot about friendship and trust, how people can grow together to support each other and growing potentially beyond each other and journeying to new lands. It follows like this hero's journey, which I think just opens up for all of those great themes of growth and development and really getting to watch someone blossom into the person that they are meant to be.
So does love drive the plot in this one as it does in Midsummer Night?
Probably not to such a large extent. There's not as many characters falling in love, but there is a little bit of a love story at the heart of the play, which does help us fall in love with our hero a little bit more and a little bit more with his journey.
What do you think the Bard would say about this sequel to his timeless story?
I hope, you know, Willie Shakes isn't rolling in his grave. I think he'd be entertained that his work lives on and is inspiring a new take on something. Michael hasn't done anything to slander any of Shakespeare's previous works. It's just building upon and really creating something of his own invention that carries the spirit of Shakespeare on and delights in the same use of language and verse.
And as a lover of sequels, I think Shakespeare would say, bully good.
NOLA Project Artistic Director A.J. Allegra, Guest Director Kristen Schaffner, and actor Kyrie Armstead. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The Henchman, a Shakespeare story by Michael Aaron Santos, runs May 8th through 26th in NOMA's Best-of Sculpture Garden. More info is online at nolaproject.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45, when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.